This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
After the horrific shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, survivors traveled to Tallahassee to ask lawmakers to demand of them that they take action on guns. They came away deeply frustrated because Florida has in place some of the most pro-gun laws in the nation, laws that would have seemed surprising, even unthinkable, a generation ago. Mike Spees has spent more than a year looking at guns and politics in Florida. He works for The Trace, which is a nonprofit news organization devoted to gun coverage, and his reporting led him to a 78-year-old NRA lobbyist called Marion Hammer. Mike Spees spoke with Evan Osnos, who's covered the NRA, too, as a staff writer at The New Yorker.
Mike, who is Marion Hammer?
So Marion Hammer is the NRA's Florida lobbyist, and for nearly four decades, she's been the most influential gun lobbyist in the country. She's turned Florida into this laboratory for experimental gun laws. Her two hallmarks, if you will, are first, her concealed carry law in the 80s, first of its kind, normalized the concealed carrying of handguns in public. Before that, it was extremely unusual. And then later on in the 2000s, she created one of the most notorious gun laws in the country, probably the most notorious, which was Stand Your Ground. If you felt like if you were fearful in a particular situation, you no longer had the duty to retreat. You had the option of using force, which makes it much easier to kill a person.
You spent a year interviewing people about the role that Marion Hammer plays in Florida politics, and you used public records requests. What did you discover about how she works?
To me, the most interesting thing was lawmakers were essentially just acting as her fig leaves. They weren't doing the work of legislators. They were just abdicating their responsibilities to Marion. And that means that from the start to finish, and when it comes to gun policy, she's overseeing the entire legislative process. But she is essentially a lawmaker that is unelected and doesn't have any of the public accountability or oversight.
Well, one of the things that comes through and that is really interesting, really gets to the heart of the puzzle around how the NRA wields the power that it does in American politics is why. Why do lawmakers do what it is that Marion Hammer asks them to?
There are a couple tools that she has that she's willing to use that other special interests don't have. One is this massive army of people in Florida that can be anywhere between several hundred thousand people and even 2 million people who can be readily mobilized through these direct emails that she sends out giving updates on different pieces of legislation. That's a very potent group, especially during an election season. She can primary virtually any Republican in a red district, and they know that. That's coupled with this institutional authority that she's gained over four decades. She's so ingrained in the government that she is able to give orders to virtually everyone. That includes some of the top officials in the governor's office. I mean, she can punish you in a variety of ways. She can block your appointment to a particular judgeship. She can try to get you fired from a position you hold in a particular agency. There must be some satisfaction that she gets out of getting government officials to do what she tells them to do. I mean, when she does communicate with them, one thing you can see, especially in aggregate when you're looking at the thousands of emails, is that she does talk to these, not just the lawmakers, but the government employees, the employees in the governor's office. She talks to them as if they work for her. I mean, there are even these mundane emails, which are not mentioned in the story, where she's emailing Scott's, like, chief executive assistant or whatever, and just saying, like, I want you to print this. I want you to send me this. And then they just immediately do it. It's not an, the thing that people have to realize is that that's not the way it works for most people. Most people, lobbyists included, don't just get to like, email that to the governor's office and then get an immediate reply. And she's just always getting an immediate reply. She just always has the open ear and the, you know, the ability to give directions.
There's one particular example that you write about in detail in this piece. It has to do with a law that would allow people without permits to carry concealed handguns while they've been ordered to evacuate their homes, so during a hurricane or something like that. So tell me a little more about this particular bill. How did it come about?
It just utterly bizarre. I mean, I just have to say that because that's what it is. And I, like most of the gun bills in Florida, there was no empirical need or evidence that suggested it was necessary. It's pretty easy to get a permit to get a concealed handgun in Florida. Very easy. That's why 1.8 million people there have them, way more than anyone else in the country.
You write about something that happened when the bill was being debated. This was in March of 2014, mm-hmm. and a lawyer from the Florida Department of Military Affairs named Captain Terrence Gorman spoke at a hearing for the bill. And he was speaking from the perspective of a first responder. And let's listen to a little bit of his testimony.
Sure. Yeah. I think you're exactly right. I think you said something that strikes the very heart of what we're asking the information on and what we're asking to deliberate. People aren't thinking clearly. Mm-hmm. And when people aren't thinking clearly, they probably shouldn't have a weapon shoved in the back of their pants. Especially yeah. when you're talking about thousands of people who need to be evacuated from an area. Mm-hmm. I 100% agree. People aren't thinking clearly. And we may need to balance the public safety aspect versus the personal safety aspect when it comes to carrying concealed, not from your front door to your car or your truck, but from the front door of your house to 150 miles away. Traffic jams, you know, bridge closures, things that where people do become frustrated. And there are actual personal life safety issues at risk. Let's balance that personal safety issue with the public safety issue and the public safety issue of the fine police officers who respond and the National Guardsmen who are there on the ground.
So the point he's making seems, frankly, quite reasonable.
Yeah.
And how did Marion Hammer respond to Captain Gorman's testimony?
So she was outraged, despite the fact that he was a stakeholder in the bill who'd been sent there to participate. She immediately after the hearing went to the governor's office, demanded that the governor immediately take the opposite position that Gorman expressed during the hearing. And then she also wanted Captain Gorman to be severely punished. And by punished, I mean she wanted him to get fired.
What happened to him ultimately?
Ultimately, Gorman wasn't fired because the only person that could fire him or remove him from service was General Emmett Titchaw, who recently retired. And when he was being bullied into doing that, he refused. He threatened to resign.
So Marion Hammer also spoke about that bill at a hearing. Let's hear some of her remarks.
In a state of an emergency with a hurricane coming and during an evacuation, if you leave your guns behind, there's a good chance they won't be there when you get back. Either destroyed in the hurricane or stolen by looters. And there's not going to be anybody there protecting your property once you leave. And when things are crazy and you've got your kids and your property in your car and you're trying to leave, you want to be sure that you can protect yourself because there's nobody else there to do that. We respect the military. We respect law enforcement.
What's that?
But we also know that the bad guys are going to do what they want to do, and the good guys need to be able to protect themselves.
You hear in her language, Mike, talk of good guys and bad guys. Is that something that's really central to her outlook?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the way she basically frames everything. And I think that's also the way the NRA largely frames everything with respect to the legislation that it cares about and the policies that it cares about. One of the most important things that the NRA does is to tell its members and gun owners that they are the good guys, the sheepdogs protecting society. It's a good story, and it's a story that people want to hear and they're receptive to. So she's just doing that again here.
As I was reading your piece, I was struck by the fact that Marian Hammer is 78 years mm-hmm. old. She communicates with her members by email.
Right.
She is lobbying members of the legislature, some of whom have been around politics for decades in one way or another.
Right.
And then there is this other force at play, which we've seen come to the fore after the Douglas High School shooting, and that is these young people who are looking at politics and saying, this doesn't make sense to me. And on top of it, they don't even really use email that much.
Right. And I think that you're really right to point that out. I mean, I think that is where the hope lies. There's some portion of people that have just accepted that this is the way politics is. You know, this is mm-hmm. and just. But it seems like these kids are just shocked by it. They're all of a sudden like and they've been shocked by it in the most extreme way because of this horrible thing that's happened. And I think that that's really the NRA's worst nightmare. I mean, they're very focused on appealing and recruiting young people to continue, you know, to continue the gravy train, so to speak. And the question of like whether or not maybe they just lost a generation, perhaps the most important one, you know, is definitely a question that's worth asking. I mean, these are people that are just, they're not okay with the way this works. And I think you think about people like Emma Gonzalez, who's been speaking so eloquently in public. I mean, I think someone like that is Marian Hammer's worst nightmare.
Mike, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Evan.
Staff writer Evan Osnow spoke with the reporter Mike Spies. You can find Spies' article about the lobbyist Marian Hammer and the NRA, which we published in partnership with The Trace, at newyorker.com.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.